Head nods, that's good. Good morning, everyone. Oh, so muted. It's the end of the week, a long week for many folks. Excuse me. Well, that's all right. Well, hopefully we can keep things exciting here. My name is John Stallo. I'm the lead program manager on the Visual Studio Lightswitch team. This week has been pretty exciting for us, which is why I'm really revving to be able to show you some cool new things. So this week, on Monday, we released an updated preview of our Lightswitch HTML client. For folks who are already familiar with Lightswitch, you know that some recent investments have been around in the HTML stack and actually building mobile touch-optimized apps. So we have an updated preview on that. What's special about the preview is really upping the ante in terms of SharePoint integration. Right from the inception of the tool, in the first release, we knew that SharePoint or integrating with SharePoint was an important, useful scenario for many of you. And so in that very first version, we had the ability to be able to attach to existing SharePoint list data, be able to bring that into your app. With the preview two that was just announced on Monday this week, we've kind of taken the next step there and actually allowing you to use Lightswitch to build business apps for SharePoint, which is pretty cool. So given the context and what we're in, the SharePoint conference, very good timing for that, and where we'll be spending a good portion of our talk today, kind of looking at those recent features and scenarios coming in. Most of my talk today will be just a few slides and hopefully trying to just show the tool in action, and really just walking through very specific business application scenarios and how you would actually build that using Lightswitch. Just so that I get a feel for how I should kind of pace the talk, can I just have a show of hands of folks who have not been able to use or play around with Lightswitch? Okay, well, that's a lot of hands. That's good. I'm enthusiastic to be able to perhaps share it for the first time and actually have you guys see it, and then perhaps motivate you for it to actually use the tool. So what I'll do is I'll just kind of start off with a very quick introduction, kind of get everyone up to speed about the tool and what I believe it's optimized for, and then we can get right in and just building an app right from scratch and then kind of taking into a little bit more advanced scenarios. Does that sound good? Okay, cool. All right. Okay, so just as a means of introduction, our goal really is for Lightswitch to be the easiest way to create modern business applications for the enterprise. There was basically two motivations that we had when we first looked at building the tool. And just to give a little bit of history, we shipped V1 about 18 months ago, and that was built on Visual Studio 2010. With Visual Studio 2012, we went out with another release, adding actually investing in OData, being able to consume OData services as well as actually produce OData services. And with this preview that you've seen coming out, very quickly on another cadence to be able to get another update on there. So we're on a fairly quick cadence of actually pushing out scenarios there. But I would say there's two fundamental motivations for the tool. One is simplicity, and the other one really is to not hit a glass ceiling. And I'll describe what I mean by that. Simplicity, that's kind of a catchphrase around keeping folks productive. What we found is a lot of data-centric business apps, they're not very complex apps, really. You're connecting to some data, perhaps you're building some forms on top of that, maybe some business logic in between. All in all, most often not very complex. But what we found is like just starting in VS and actually building that app over and over again, you're writing plumbing code over and over again. How do I grab data from the back-end database, bring it forward? What are the architectural decisions I need to make? What are the technology decisions that I need to make of my UI stack and my data stack and so forth? It was just like this repetitive kinds of things that you need to build over and over again. So that was one thing, is we wanted to significantly boost the productivity in building this class of apps in Visual Studio. The second one was, it's maybe a pitfall that we've fallen into, I acknowledge that in the past, which is in these kinds of productivity tools, they demo great. Right? I'll be up here and demoing it and you'll think that's great. And then you'll go and use it. And your app is your own unique business app. It has your own unique requirements. And every now and then, you need to do something that is unique to your particular app. It might be unique about the data that you're connecting to, unique about the way that you want the UI to flow. And so what we wanted to provide is a productive experience, but also the ability for you to be able to kind of refine the application, add your own unique requirements, and basically have the application be able to grow up as the needs and the requirements of the application grow up. And hopefully, as we go through the talk, you'll get a sense of both of those two aspects, the simplicity side of things, as well as just the flexibility that you get as a developer tool inside Visual Studio building these business apps. So what I'm going to do is just go right in to Visual Studio. And folks should be able to see that. So I'm in Visual Studio 2012. I actually installed the HTML client preview. That was announced this Monday, so that's what I have on my box. So I'm just going to go and create a new project. And you'll see here there's basically kind of two choices. One is, what's your programming language, VB or C#? Those are the two that we support out of the box. And then in the first version, what we first shipped with was a Silverlight client. And that is really optimized for kind of desktop scenarios. If you have like a need for rapid data entry and you want data grids and all that kind of thing, you have a very rich experience for being able to do that using the Silverlight client. And then as I referred to before, this HTML stack and kind of having that client, and typically really at this point in time, really looking for of building apps that are touch optimized, able to run on your modern devices, whether that's a tablet or a mobile phone and so forth. So that's what that is for. And so given that's kind of the newer piece here, I'll show that. So I'm just going to choose HTML application and give a name for my project. Hit OK. OK, so a lot of these business apps are very data-centric. And so the best possible place to start inside LightSwitch is really just being able to describe the data. The more you describe the data within the tool, the more defaults that we can run for you throughout the application. And so really there's kind of like two places, or one of two entry points. One is creating your own data or actually attaching to existing data out there. And so I'm going to show both of these today. So first up, let's go and attach to some existing data. So the data source wizard pops up, and you can see there's already some built-in data sources that we know how to connect to. So the first one, no surprise there, databases. No surprise there, that built-in support for just attaching to SQL or SQL Azure databases. And in fact, any EF provider that you have on your machine will be able to attach that. And there's quite a few of them in the market. So being able to connect to Oracle, MySQL, and so forth, is supported right there and then. Being able to connect to SharePoint lists that you have in your site is another one. New for VS 2012 was being able to connect to OData feeds. And OData is very fast becoming kind of a lingua franca or just a standard protocol that a lot of applications or a lot of platforms are actually surfacing up their data. Microsoft, obviously, you have other companies like SAP and so forth that are investing in that protocol. So being able to connect to data within your enterprise through OData is a upcoming scenario. And then for anything that you just can't connect to that we don't have in the box support for, you can roll your own class. Here it's a WCF RIA class. That's basically a code-oriented experience. There's a little bit more code that you need to write. So basically, it gets to anything else. It could be a legacy system, it could be a web service, it could be anything that you just want to be able to connect to. You have a path to be able to do that in the tool. So I'm going to choose OData here. First thing it asks me is for the endpoint, which I've got here. There's a service that's available. that I've put out on Azure. So I'm going to bring that in. It's different ways that you can hook up to it through auth. So what it's done is just gone overhead, and it's just learned a little bit about that data service. So here there's a few tables that I'll pick up. I'll rename this to Contoso Data, and we'll hit finish. So what that's done is actually it's brought in that schema into my app. So this is it's a data source that already exists. So within the tool, I'm unable to modify the schema. I'm unable to like add or delete columns and so forth because it's an external. It's already attached. But I can make tweaks here to kind of add a little bit more richer information inside the tool, so that again I'm driving better defaults throughout the experience. So for example, there's this notion of business types that we have. So a lot, all these columns are like they're a string for category image. It's actually been persisted as binary. But within Lightswitch, there's this notion of business types, which are just a higher level abstraction of types that are very common in business apps. So image would be one of them. If I were to pull down this string field, there's email address, phone number. And typically, they encapsulate some validation or other business logic, maybe some specific UI or formatting rules that come along with that business type. So category was one of the tables. It picked up that there's a relationship over here to product, so I'll go over to that. And again, there's a bunch of fields that you can set. For example, if I don't want to display things by default, I can go ahead and do that. I can rename fields. I can do all that kind of stuff. So the tip really basically is you can attach to existing data sources. The more that you describe the data within the tool, the more defaults that we can run for you. So now that I've got data that I want to play around with, next thing is to actually build UI. So to do that, I go ahead and add what we call screens. And this is kind of another place that we saw over and over again inside these business apps, is that you have just these very common user interaction patterns all the time. I'm searching through or browsing through a list of data, or I'm viewing the details of data, maybe master details relationships, and just being able to view those and work with those. These are very common kinds of patterns. So we have a few screen templates that we've already provided out of the box. This is actually an extensibility point that you can define your own screen templates that could be inserted here. That could showcase specific controls already be set up in a certain way to whatever your common needs are. The same thing with business types, and that's actually a bit of a theme that you will find throughout the tool here, is it is very extensible. So if you want to roll your own business type, that's also a place where you can do that. So I'm just going to choose the browse data screen template. I'm going to choose to view products. And given this is my first screen, let's just call this home. And click OK. And then I could go ahead and actually modify and start tweaking that UI. But I'm just hit F5, and let's just see where we're at so far. Again, I've attached to some data. I've chosen a screen template. And what comes up is a HTML5-based and CSS3-based application. That will actually, it runs in the browser, and it would run on your tablet, your phone, whether that's an iPad or Windows device or whatever, that's giving you this reach of the product. So you kind of see it's a simple app so far. It just gives me a list of all the products that are in that database. You can see there's already actually some built-in best practices in the app. For example, if there were 1,000, 100,000 records, we weren't going to bring them all in. We're going to page it by default. This being an app where we envision it being used on touch-optimized devices, there's inertial scrolling already built in. So the faster you flick, the faster you will scroll through the app. If I bring in, I don't know if you kind of saw that, but as I kind of go through, we'll actually bring in the next page just automatically for me. So those kinds of best practices was also kind of a fundamental tenet of the tool. I didn't have to think about this stuff. But the best practices that are just being around, you know, N-tier applications, you know, where my validation should run, those kinds of things, is just kind of built in into the tool. It's very prescriptive. Okay, so that's data, screens. You kind of see my screen isn't very, well, it's not making very good use of space. It's not very exciting. I mean, if it was perhaps on a smaller device like this, maybe, you know, on my, in my hand, that would look okay. But given that it's a tablet, it's not making very good use of it. I got these big, broad kind of lines out here. So what I'm going to do is close the app. I'm just going to make some tweaks here. So what you see over here is really just a description of what's in my application. There's data, and then there's the controls that are actually allowing me to access that data. So for my list here, I can just very easily just swap that out with a tile list that's already built in. Again, this would be another point. If I just want to write some, I want to bring in the custom control. Maybe it's an HTML5 control that's out on the web. I just want to bring this in. It knows how to display lists. I would be able to do that here. So I'm going to choose the tile list. And I'm going to maybe just choose to bring, just display the product name and the unit price. For product name, let's just make this maybe the font style for it to be strong. And I want to bring in some other screen data. Remember, category was a related table that's related to product. So I'm going to bring in the category image for that product. And I'm just going to put that up, reorder some fields. For my image, I'm going to maybe set the pixel size to be 40 by 40. And then this is a tile list. So for the size of my tiles, I'm going to change this perhaps to be 220 by 90. Maybe just hit F5 and see where I'm at. So you can kind of see that I've already started to build up something that kind of scales a little bit better. If I'm on a narrower device or perhaps I'm in portrait mode, it's going to make good use. If I'm over in landscape or on a larger device, it's already going to scale there. That's fine. Maybe I could spend a little bit more time, maybe get the icon on the side and so forth. But you kind of get the idea, is you can do some very, very quick tweaks on list data. One of the things that you will note here is if I were to use this perhaps to look up a product and kind of just look it in the list, it would be pretty hard for me to do that because it's not sorted. So that's a very common requirement, not only just sorting, but things like, I don't want to just connect to all the data. I want to run some filters. I want to have some custom sorting on it. I want to be maybe passing in some parameters and so forth. So we've covered data and screens. Queries is just another core part of the Lightswitch experience. So to do that, I'm going to go back up and view the tables that I have over here. Right-click and say Add Query for Products. And I'm going to call this Available Products. And you can see how there's just a very simple query designer experience here. I can go ahead and add, product name is, I want to sort on product name. It also saw that I can not only use any of the product fields in my query, but also from that any related tables as well. So I can do some pretty cool things just right here in the designer here. I want to add a filter perhaps of, I don't want to show any discontinued products. So I'll set up that clause there. So now that I've got like a query, a special query that I can run, I could have just chosen that right at the start when I created my screen. But given that I've done that after the fact, that's fine. I can just go over here to my home screen, choose products. And then as a query source, I see available products. That's the query that I created. And you can see there's some other fields over here as well. What's my default paging size? Currently it's 45. Maybe I set to 25 and so forth. So if I hit F5 here, I should be able to see my products that are already filtered and sorted. All right, so I used all of that just kind of introduce LightSwitch and what does it feel working with a tool and being able to build data-centric business apps like this. Again, data, screens, queries is pretty much the fundamental piece of the application. And one of the key things here is being able to also write code. This is a developer tool. It's inside Visual Studio. We'll see that there's actually quite a rich API behind all of this to be able to get to whether it's client-side code or server-side code, whatever. I can inject my own requirements here or my own business logic here that is unique to my application. Hopefully what you'll also get a sense of is when I do that, I'm really writing my own business logic. I'm not too terribly concerned about plumbing code in this application. There's a question right at the back there. Is search available in the client for this version? Okay, and I gather that is specifically asking around the HTML client. The answer is not in the HTML client as a built-in as a built-in UI. Remember the queries the query that I created here? I could very quickly create a parameter that could be my search string, and that would be very easy to bind that to this list, which would give me that text box, and in fact, any other kind of UI that I want to act as the filter for my app. So, a very easy way for you to be able to do that, and really be able to for you to build your own custom searching over search experience over a list. Cool. Okay, so let me just step back a little bit and kind of let's start maybe describing this in the context of a real business app scenario. Maybe we can start now building out some streams of scenarios in the application. So you can kind of see over here, it's basically a database full of food products. Let's say that I work for a company that sells food products like this, and we sell it to stores nationwide. And our sales reps actually are the guys who actually do the delivery of the products. And given the fact that they're on site with customers, they get to really see what the product experience, what's the experience of this product right on in the aisle in the store. And we'd like to leverage that fact. So given that they're actually on site, they're probably using a mobile device, we'd like for them to use this app and just very quickly capture some survey information. What's the experience about, the display lighting? Is it clean? Is it prominent? How far is it, from the store entry? Those kinds of things, which we can very easily collect in this app, which would then store it away for later, analyzing it and so forth. So let's start building out that experience here. So one of the first things I probably want to do here is kind of as I tap each of these products, kind of have some information that pops up and gives me a little bit more information about that product, and then maybe kick off that workflow. So what I'm going to do is we've got products and customers, but we have no data yet to be able to, or table, to be able to hold that survey information. So I showed you before that you can connect to existing data. Defining your own tables is a cinch. So add table here. Type in survey, and then here I'm just going to type in various fields for my table. So maybe you want to track shelf placement here. Give it a type. Maybe it's string. Maybe it's a required field. I'll go in here and say, well, where is it in the actual aisle? Like so. Maybe display cleanliness, and let's make that an integer. And so forth. So I could go ahead and enter a lot more kind of survey questions here. But given that this is a mobile app, we've got strings and integers here. Typically what you don't want is for someone to be futzing around with the onboard keyboard and typing in a whole bunch of things. And that's very error prone. So what you typically want to do is kind of constrain the experience for the user. And so in this case, for shelf placement, I just want to define a quick choice list. And say, either it's top shelf, maybe it's, or eye level, which is better, and It's at the bottom. Aisle placement here. It would be middle of the aisle, not too good. End of aisle, which is better. It's more traffic area. And then what's called in the industry aisle end caps, which is kind of like the prominent displays right at the end of the aisle. That's pretty good in terms of experience there. So set those properties up. And just very quickly, display cleanliness. This is an integer here, so maybe this is more like a star rating. Let me just very quickly say poor, fair, or excellent. Like so. Okay, we've got surveys. But surveys don't just live by themselves. They're related to data, right? So I'm going to go ahead and set up a relationship. And in this relationship dialog, I get to say, well, what the relationship is between surveys and products, which is actually pretty cool here. Because what this is allowing me to do is I've got an external OData feed. I've got a database that I'm actually creating now that has my survey data. And I'm able to actually create not only relationships within the same database, but actually across data sources, whether that's in the SharePoint list, whether that's an OData feed here, another database, and so forth. We have this notion of virtual relationships, which is pretty cool because it actually can drive a lot of logic and UI for us. So there's a few things that I can set up over here. There's some kind of a more natural language kind of way of reading the relationship. A survey must have a product. A product can have many surveys. Sounds about right, so I'll go for that. And because this is actually across relationships, it's actually creating a foreign key for me right there. So I'm going to click OK here. And I'm going to say that I don't want to see the foreign key. I don't want to display it by default. And the other relationship I want to set up is surveys and customers, given I'm actually on site. Same thing here. Survey must have a customer. Looks like a good relationship that I've already set up. Like so. Okay, so what I did is I defined a survey table. It's going to help me collect information about the product experience. Go in here and add a screen for being able to create surveys. That's a built-in add edit detail screen template. I'm going to point that to surveys. Click OK. That's given me a default screen. I could go ahead and continue to customize that like you saw me previously. But what I want to do over here is kind of add a button in my main screen and kind of just have that connect up or kick off that workflow. So one of the things I'm going to do over here perhaps is create a new dialog or a pop-up. Let's call this View Product Info. I'm going to choose to just use read-only controls here because it really is just popping up some extra information. I'm going to say I just want to have a close button on that. And then I want to make that a columns layout. And basically, I'm going to have two columns. The product that I just selected, I'm just going to bring that in like so. And I'm going to bring in as another column, let's bring in that image again. Like so. I don't want to show a label for the image. And you can see that you get quite a bit of control over layout and sizing. You can also see that we're still working out some of the defaults here, what should be the defaults. I'm saying I want to be able to just fit to content over here. So I've got my dialog that's going to display product information. And then what I'm going to do is on my list, you can see that there's an actions list over here. And this is, you know, there's an action for a tapping. You can see that over time we would add more like swiping, you know, list items and so forth. I'm going to bring this up over here. And either I could choose to write my own code over here to actually kick off, or I've got some built-in methods here as well. So I'm going to show a dialog. I'm going to show the view product info dialog that I just created. Like so. And I've gone through quite a few steps. So let's just hit F5, see where we're at, and then kind of see what else we need to do. All right, so if everything is working fine, you can kind of see if I tap each of these items, I'm getting a kind of a light box kind of experience. Tapping outside, you know, dismisses it. And then what I want to do is have that you know, create a survey right from here. Just add a button there. So right over inside my dialog, I'm going to bring up, actually, before I do that, I'm going to first bring in surveys into my screen. And then over here, I'm going to add a button. And then just seeing some more of the built-in methods that you have available. There's things for navigating to different screens, different UI dialogues, and so forth. Surveys has some built-in methods as well, just being able to add it, delete data, and so forth. Or again, if you have something custom you want to have, you can just write your own code. But here I'm going to choose Add and Edit New. I have a survey detail screen, so it already just picked that for me by default. And hit OK. Now let's run F5 again. So I'm just going to tap on an item. Now I've got my Add Survey button. I select that. That takes me to my survey details screen that I created before. You can see product is already pre-selected for me, given that kind of already knew that I went from the products list. And remember, customer, that's coming from another database, but I set up that virtual relationship. So if I tap on this item, it's already inferred that that's a related list, so it's already giving me that as a lookup table. So that's pretty cool. And then, again, having a very constrained experience here, where I'm, as a sales rep, I'm right on site, I just want to very quickly tap through these things. So you can see the choice lists are coming up here. If I try and submit, you can see there's already some built-in validation here, right? I said that my fields all are required fields. They all need to be filled in. So I'm already getting some built-in validation here. If I want to run my own validation logic and write my own code, I can do that as well. So I'm going to set that over to maybe fair. Go in, maybe add very quickly. You can kind of see that it's a very, very fluid experience for... And having that data just saves to the database, and all that is kind of taken care of, you know, for me. So I'm going am I going too fast, too slow? Just right? Cool. All right. That's what I like to hear. All right. So what I've shown so far is pretty much working within the designers. You can see that you can actually get quite a bit done without writing a lot of code. In fact, I haven't written any code yet. To be able to do some very simple CRUD, navigating between screens, and you know, doing some simple queries and so forth. But this is a developer tool. It's inside Visual Studio. Remember that no glass ceilings statement that I made before? It was very important for us to be able to give you the right hooks so that you can add your own business logic, your own code. Sometimes it might be your own custom control that you want to add over here. The whole thing here is, I've been able to build a very simple app, but kind of functional already, right? Very quickly, and I haven't had to write a lot of plumbing code at all. It's allowing me to really focus in on what makes my app unique. And that's where we'd like to, that's a measure of success for this tool, is if you're spending time of what makes your application unique, and typically that's around the business logic that you're writing, then that's cool. If you're getting to see that you're writing a little bit more plumbing code, that's where we need to improve the experience a little bit more, right? That's an underlying tenet for us. So to maybe just kind of show you that, I'm going to go, there's various places. Maybe a good place to start is within the data. So I'm going to go back to the surveys table that I created before. And a tip of if you're thinking about, well, where can I write code, either on data or screens and so forth, you'll see that there's a write code menu right up the top right. And there's a drop down that you've got here. I don't know if everyone can read that, and I'll just kind of go through the drop down there. But you can see that there's a lot of places where now you can actually start customizing the business logic for this app. So this is on survey data. So for example, maybe as my survey is created, so maybe some default logic, or what we call the save pipeline, right? As when a survey is just about to be inserted, or right after it was inserted, maybe I want to go ahead and touch some other tables, or I want to add some order information about the table. Similarly, right after it was updated, or just about it to you know, before it's been being updated, right after it's deleted, and so forth. You kind of get the picture. There's also a category of what we call access control methods. This is a very common scenario in these apps where, well, hang on, you know, depending on who you are, you may actually have not access to save to this data. And so you can actually put in those access control checks. So things like, you know, can I insert, can I read, can I update, can I delete? You can add your own logic there. And then there's a whole bunch of other kind of places, things like one of the very common scenarios here is surveys filter. Surveys filter would be, let's say that you only ever want salespeople to only ever see their own records that they created and no one else's. That's it, right? Like, ever. Or, you know, an employee's information, they can see their information, but that's it. But if you're a manager, perhaps you can actually see a little bit more broader information. Those are the kinds of things that you can put in at these places right here that apply to all the queries that you have in your app. Same thing for, you know, what happens when a save perhaps fails and you want to have some rollback logic there. All these kinds of places you can actually put your own logic. So I'm going to choose one of these here. Let's say it's surveys inserting, so just as we're about to add a new survey into the database. Selecting one of those takes me to the code editor, and I have just a method stub here where basically I just write my own logic. I didn't have to think about how to wire all this stuff up. I'm already getting the entity, which is the new survey record, that's coming in, and so I can check it, I can add new things to it, and so forth. So if I say entity dot, you can kind of see that there's the fields that I added before, so customer, shelf placement, and all that kind of stuff. Maybe to give you a feel for some additional things, if I say entity.details and then dot, you can see that there's actually a lot more metadata that I can access around this entity. So for example, if I want to check, you know, has it been validated, or you know, what the entity state is it, has it been added, is it just about to be discarded? Those kinds of things, at any point in time that I want to actually run my own custom logic based off of, you know, these kinds of states or these kinds of conditions, it's kind of giving me a lot of surface area to play with to be able to do this. So perhaps one of the things that we want to do is, you know, if the display isn't clean, we want to tag that as maybe, you know, a customer that we want to follow up with, you know, later on. So perhaps not have the sales reps remember that. Maybe just have some built-in logic that kind of just automatically, you know, flags that for follow-up. So I'm just going to type some very simple logic. Entity dot if display cleanliness is less than or equal to 2. Remember, we had a scale of 1 to 3. Then I want to do something. So maybe it's a flag that I want to set up. So I'll have a follow-up field. I'll set this to be a Boolean. And so I'll say entity.followup equals true. And just before that, like that. So for now, set a breakpoint here. This is server-side code that is going to be executed right as I'm creating or about to save new data. So let's just go in, maybe add one for Chai over here. So we're going to go very quickly, just fill in. And then for display cleanliness, I'm going to set that to, you know, maybe poor. And then I'm going to save that data. Saving it, I hit that breakpoint because I'm just about to insert this. It's going to now mark that as requiring follow-up. So you kind of get the picture over here. I'm able to write some, so kind of insert my own logic here in the app. Maybe what we'll do is, it's going to help us out a little bit as well. I'm going to add a query that is just going to help me see what those follow-up surveys are. So let's call this follow-up surveys. The filter is very basic. It's going to say follow-up equals true. And then maybe I want to sort on the most recent, right? So there was an ID field that's automatically set for me. So I'm going to set that to descending like that. And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly because you can kind of see the pattern that I had before. It's quite basic to kind of set up. I'm going to have a browse follow-up surveys screen. So let me just call this follow-ups. And then maybe on my home screen, I just want to add a button there for sales reps just to very quickly go to their follow-up surveys. Add a new button over here. I'm going to choose to navigate that to follow-ups. Change the name of my button. And then maybe just in the follow-up screen, and give out, just maybe display a little bit more information in each of the tiles. The product, the customer, maybe display cleanliness and follow-up. Let's just run that. So I've got my follow-ups button over here. Select that, and there was that one item, remember, that we added that actually, that's the point where we set that flag. And so I've got my list up there. Okay, cool. So everything I've done up until now is like, where's SharePoint and all this? Well, this is really just web app development, right? I've been working with an HTML client that's working with a server over here that's pulling data, it's saving some data, it's got some business logic that it's running, and everything about it is it's just a web app. And so that's kind of one of the fundamental things here with the new app model that with the new app model in SharePoint 2013, it's really embraced these standards, HTML5, CSS, JavaScript, and all of that. And so really, I'm able to leverage my existing skills here to be able to build out SharePoint apps. Let me just maybe switch over and give a little bit of context of maybe why would I want to do this in SharePoint? First off, really building apps where your users are. So far, I've been creating an app, I've been iterating over it, but I have had no thought really to what's going to be the experience of how do people find my app? Where am I going to host it? Do they log into it? Where do they log in? All those kinds of things. And really, you want to basically place your apps of where your users are spending most of their time. And one of the things that we're all aware of is users are really increasingly spending a lot of time inside SharePoint. It really is becoming a hub of where you go in and you're able to look up documents, you're able to review stuff, you're able to find your to-do list, other information that's out there, working, collaborating with folks. So ideally what you would want folks to be able to do is sign into their SharePoint site like they do every day, and right there and then be able to discover, launch these apps. You want to be able to maybe control access to the application just by nature of the fact that it's within that SharePoint site, and that's the way that you control access to other resources that the team has. So really putting the app where users are is, I think, a real fundamental value of building SharePoint apps. And the other thing is, well, what's the device they're using? Today, they're using a whole bunch of devices. Folks who are bringing in their devices from home, bringing it into the workplace, and they expect to be able to access their applications here. And so what I've been building out over here, you can see, is it's running in the browser. So whether I'm using my own iPad or my Windows phone or whatever, I'm able to connect to this app. And that's just an expectation that folks have. And yet, as developers, we're being asked to kind of build these things, and it's quite daunting, actually. So building apps where your users are, I think, is one key thing. For the developer, just being able to control access identity or manage user identity and who can access the app, just having a very consistent experience for how do you want to deploy and update these applications as well is another thing. And then, obviously, once the app is inside SharePoint, where you want to do some more things with kind of integrating it with other stuff that's happening around in the site. Maybe it's kicking off a workflow. Maybe it's pulling in some list data and being able to work off of that, maybe relating it to something else. So these are all the things that I'm really excited about this direction that we've taken and really enabling this as an option for folks building business apps inside Visual Studio and being able to actually build SharePoint apps. So rather than talk more about it, I'm actually going to show how to do that. So hopefully the right screen comes up. Okay, so this is my application. This is the one that I've been working with. I want to actually run this inside SharePoint now. So within Lightswitch, again, this is with Preview 2 that was released on Monday. If I go to Properties, you can see there's quite a few things that I can set over here. One of the new tabs is SharePoint. So I've just very simply go ahead and say I wanted to enable SharePoint for this app. And what I would enter here, typically as I'm developing, really just point it to a developer site. With the preview, I will note that in terms of F5ing and kind of running through kind of developer scenarios, we do support both O365 as well as on-prem. In being able to actually publish your apps, one of the limitations or constraints for the preview at this moment is just going out to O365. We'll open up other scenario paths with time, but those are the constraints for the preview at least. So I point it to a dev site that I've already got running over here. I can go ahead and just validate that I've got a connection, which, phew, I know that internet connection has dogged many folks. Hopefully not for the next remaining 30 minutes. So I'll turn on SharePoint here. And with the preview, it's actually showing me files that really aren't very useful. There's nothing really over here. What it's doing is it's adding some files. It's actually adding a SharePoint project in my app. I'm just going to hit F5 and see what we have so far. So you actually see, like down below here, there's one thing that it hasn't been doing before, which is actually now it's actually going ahead, talking with the SharePoint site. And this is the first time that I'm going through this. So it's actually going to install this application on my online SharePoint site. Now, what you'll see, this could be like the longest 30 seconds on stage, but the very first time you run through that, it actually installs it. And so that takes a little bit more time. On subsequent F5s, if I'm just touching a little bit code here, I'm adding a screen here and hit F5 again, it won't need to go through all of that again. So we're doing the smarts to be able to kind of get you back into that F5 experience. And this is a good place to catch some questions. So I saw a hand up over there. Okay, good question. The question is, with the survey table that I created before, where's that going? I created a new table. That's going to be an actual database that will need to be provisioned and built and deployed with my application. And there's a whole integrated experience for doing that. The very cool thing with SharePoint is when and if I have time, I'll show this step. When you go and publish your application, there's this notion of auto-hosted apps. And what that basically says is, this application has a server side to it. That's where I'm running a lot of my business logic here. It has some data. And I'm just going to give this package to SharePoint. And at the time that application is installed, SharePoint is just going to do all that provisioning for me. So behind the scenes, it's going to actually spin up some Azure sites. It's going to create a SQL Azure database, and that's where my survey is going to go in. From that developer experience, I don't need to muck around with that at all. But that's where ultimately it lives. If you were doing this in Azure, there's another very similar experience where we're able to go out and provision either in SQL Azure or SQL for any tables that you've defined as part of your app. Okay, so the question is, well, where does it live prior? It's actually just running on LocalDB or SQL Express on my dev box. It was installed with VS, and we're just using that as a developer kind of environment for running your app. That's all. There's a question over here.
Yeah, so is the database running so when SharePoint's
okay, if I've understood the question correctly, it's more related to on-prem deployment, or maybe just as an example of where does that database actually run? So the app model with SharePoint 2013 is nothing in these apps, whether it's server-side code or the database, runs inside the SharePoint site, okay? So it is provisioned separately. So in this case, or in the O365 case, an option for me is to just auto-provision that for me, which will end up in Azure. A path for on-prem will be that I'm going to provision that myself. And so whether that's on-site, on IIS, or on Azure, and so forth, that would be a path for me to provision my server and my database, and then have, and SharePoint would be able to connect to that. The whole auth and permissions thing of SharePoint kind of accepts the app accepts SharePoint is actually all done for me automatically, which is a very cool thing. I'll keep on going through the demo, and I saw some other hands, and I promise I'll get to some other questions. So what I see here is the very first time it's going to have to establish that trust relationship. So I'm going to say yes, I want to trust this app. And basically, what you see is my app that I've been working on, basically unmodified, now just running within the context of SharePoint. The one thing that you will notice is the fact that it is running in SharePoint, I see the SharePoint Chrome control already just kind of embedded in here. One of the things that it does is it kind of just, what we found is it kind of visually anchors the UI. So if whatever theme my SharePoint site is, it'll actually be inheriting it from that. The other, perhaps more utilitarian thing is I can just go back to my parent site just by wherever I am in the app, I need to get back into the site, and I can do that. And so you can see this is actually my my dev site that I've got here. You can see that there's some other apps that I've been running and testing. And here's my Contoso Surveys app, which was just created a few minutes ago. So one of the other really neat things here is I've got an app. It's running now. Users can log into that SharePoint site. They just log in once. They have all the apps that they want. They can then launch those apps. The cool thing here is that the identity of the SharePoint user who's logged into the website and then launches the app, that flows with the application itself. And that's very useful in a number of things. If you want to be able to write back into some SharePoint artifacts, maybe it's a list or a document library or pictures or whatever, it's going to use the logged in user's credentials and basically their permissions to be able to do that. And so that flow is automatically set up for me to do that. So maybe just to illustrate that, maybe in a simple way, but what I'll do is I'm going to go back into my surveys table. And let's say that I want to track who this is actually created by. So it's just going to be a string over here. Back in my inserting logic, I can just say, you know, entity, as I'm about to say for the first time, is created by. And then me.application, that's just the built-in class that's part of LightSwitch apps. I can go ahead and say, well, who's the user? And then, you know, various things like what's their name, username, and so forth. You'll also see that there's a permissions, some permissions that I can also work with or request and see if they actually have permissions to be able to do certain things inside my application. For preview 2, this isn't quite tied up on the permission side yet, but it is a flow that we're interested in kind of having work. But over here, I'm just going to perhaps use a full name over here. And maybe the scenario here really is, you know, why am I actually grabbing who created it, is these apps, remember, this app is running on a mobile device. Apps on mobile devices are typically very personal apps. You want to, you know, I don't want to see everyone's surveys. I want to see my surveys, the surveys that I created, right? So one of the things I can do here, now that I'm actually grabbing you know, who was actually created by, I can go back up into my follow-up surveys. And over here, I can define, actually, I also want to constrain the surveys here to be based on, you know, on my surveys that I actually created. So there's some kind of simple things that I can do inside the designer over here. For anything else that I perhaps, you know, want to do some more complicated kind of logic that I want to run, I can also do that. I can always drop down into code. And you can see this as a kind of a theme over here. I can always drop back and do more complex things. So query here, what I can do is I can just write a link statement off of for the query. So where s.created by I'm going to match that up to whoever actually created it and who the logged in user currently is. I'm going to set a breakpoint there. Okay, so here's my app. I click on follow ups. It's querying for the follow-up surveys. You can see I've hit my breakpoint over here. It's going to be filtering on whoever. And there's no items that come up. And that's because, well, I wasn't kind of tagging who it was created by up until right now. So I actually have no survey. So if I go back to home and let's just set up maybe a new survey over here very quickly. I'm going to save. I'm hitting my breakpoints here. Now I'm going to actually accept. You can actually see .user.fullname is me. That's because I'm actually signed in into my O365 site as myself. Like so. If I go back up to follow-ups, I'm going to hit that query again. And you can see that's now showing up. So now what I just very quickly did is I'm leveraging the fact that identity is flowing from the SharePoint site into my app, so I haven't asked users to log in again, and I'm using that to then give very personalized data or filtered data to whoever's actually using the app. Yeah? Cool. Spontaneous applause will always... it's great. So just kind of looking at time here, there's a few things here that I want to show. We spoke about deploying apps. I won't show the full experience here, but perhaps just as an entry point, because I kind of described what happens. So once I'm ready to actually deploy my app, again with Preview 2, the constraint is I'm able to publish to or deploy to O365 sites. I'd basically just go over here and go to launch publish. But now because this is actually a SharePoint app, it asks me SharePoint things. So is this going to be auto hosted? I'll say yes. This would be the place where I also get to be able to say, actually, I want to I want to provision my own server and database. I want to do that for myself. Again, that's not supported in the preview for now. Remember, I'm attaching to a data source, so here it's allowing me to kind of change the connection string. Maybe I was pointing to a developer database. Maybe I want to point it to the actual production data and so forth. If I hit publish over here, what it would actually do is it's going to create a SharePoint application file for me, which then has all the information that I can then take, go to my, as the administrator of my SharePoint site, go and add it to my application catalog, and then from there, what I've basically enabled is for folks on their particular sites to then go ahead and install that application. So I take an app, I put it into the application catalog, typically within an enterprise, and then I'm enabling folks to be able to install that application for their site. When they do that, everything is auto-provisioned for them. The database, if I created one for us, the server, all of that, it's kind of all just done for me, which is very, very nice. Okay, so that was just very quickly going into publish. One of the things that I get asked a lot in these applications, because it's just a very common requirement, is just being able to kind of customize the theme of the application. Maybe it's to, maybe I'm going after a certain look and feel, but also very, very commonly for these business apps, I've got maybe corporate branding. I want to use corporate icons and so forth. So I kind of see we've kind of got this white on black, very cool kind of thing. Maybe that doesn't work with my corporate branding at all. I certainly maybe want to take over the splash screen, the built-in icons and so forth. With HTML client apps, it really is just CSS, and so you can kind of just change that. So you can go into the project CSS and change that and customize it to wherever you want. But we've gone a step further. And what we've done, we've actually enabled, kind of going through CSS right from the basics, it is hard. If anyone has done CSS development, there's a lot of dependencies and stuff you need to track. It's not always the simplest experience. So what we've done is, given this is actually built on a lot of standards, HTML, HTML5, JavaScript, and also we're actually also using jQuery and jQuery Mobile. So all the controls that are out there, it's a very rich ecosystem, a lot of code that is just shared out there, very rich community. You can just take those in and bring them into your app to customize it further. So what I'd like to show is if I go over to just my browser, go to jQuery Mobile, their site, they have an on-site app called Theme Roller. Anyone played around with Theme Roller? A few hands. It's just it's a very cool kind of WYSIWYG way of just describing jQuery Mobile themes. And so I'm able to get to like font family and button colors and all that kind of stuff. And what I would actually do is I can either use something that has already been built for jQuery Mobile and just import that into my app. But as a good starting point, what I can do is switch over to where the CSS for my app is. And you can kind of see here that all it is, if I look in default HTM, it's using what is just built into my project, the darktheme.css. So if I go to darktheme.css and just basically copy-paste this, that's all I need to do, copy-paste this, and in jQuery Mobile Theme Roller, choose to import that, what I now see is my app's theme now inside Theme Roller, and now I've got a WYSIWYG experience for just being able to modify my theme. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but maybe let's just get green and make this my green theme. So once I've done my edits here, I can then download that theme. So I'm going to call this my green theme. I'm going to download that. Like so. And then over in my app, I'm going to just import that theme. So add existing, go over to my desktop. grab that theme that I downloaded from jQuery Mobile. Remember, I called it the green theme. Add that. And then just instead of using the dark theme, I'm going to use the green theme that I created. Hit run, and you should see my theme actually just pop up. So hopefully providing just a smoother flow, and rather than provide something proprietary, just be able to enable you to be able to leverage the existing artifacts, you know, existing tools, existing knowledge that's out there in the very rich community around HTML5, just to be able to bring that in to your Lightswitch app. So not looking particularly nice over there, but you kind of get the idea that if I spent a little bit more time on that. Cool. All right. Let's see. What else can I show here? So we've basically gone over a lot of the basics here, being able to go with an app, have a lot of defaults set up for you, then you can refine it, then you can add your own business logic here, you can take over the theme, you can put it into SharePoint. Just putting it into SharePoint gives you a lot of benefits, right? It's a central place, user identity flow, all that kind of stuff. One of the things I haven't touched on, though, is, well, then I can do richer things, right? I can have my app now that it's in SharePoint, be able to integrate with other SharePoint artifacts, other apps. So I'm going to kind of show you how to do that. What I did over here is I just flipped over to a view that just kind of shows you what are the projects that make up my app. I have a client project. That's just a JavaScript HTML project. I've got a server project. Here it's just VB.net. It's going to live in Azure. And then when I turned on SharePoint, it added a SharePoint project. And for any folks who have seen the various experiences, the various things that you can do with Visual Studio inside SharePoint projects, you'll have already learned that there's a broader set of things that really is a lot of flexible things that you can create as part of that SharePoint project. So for example, if I want to go ahead and say add a document library or add a picture library, so I'll go over here, add new item. Here I would, all the things that I get to add inside SharePoint projects is available to me inside my, in this project with Lightswitch. So I can choose list over here, for example, maybe call this my photos list. I'm going to choose that this is going to be a picture library. Hit finish. And you kind of see what it's going to do here is it's going to add a picture library inside my project. So what that means is it's actually going to be a picture library that comes along with my app. When folks install the application, it's also going to install a picture library. Why? Because maybe I want to show some, I want to be storing some images. As the survey is being conducted, I just want to enable the person to, click a photo, take a photo, and be able to upload that as part of the survey. Now, one of the very cool things here is, why would I do that with photos? Why wouldn't I just store it in the database? Well, SharePoint here provides a really cool thing with picture libraries, and that is to be able to very easily be able to, once a photo has been uploaded, give me a thumbnail view of that, give me a web-optimized view of that. If I were to have to do all of that myself, I would be writing a lot of code in my app. So being able to take my application, have it inside SharePoint, and then be able to leverage useful SharePoint services, useful SharePoint libraries or lists and data and so forth in my app is another very cool aspect to having my app actually living as a SharePoint app. So I'm not going to build all of this out for you, really because of time. Maybe just to show you an entry point. What I showed is to being able to add this SharePoint artifacts as part of my project. If I were back in my surveys inserting logic, very quickly just saying me.application dot, you see that there's SharePoint here. When this namespace comes alive when I enable SharePoint for my project. And then you see that there's some built-in things here. It's already doing all that access token stuff for me, so I don't have to write any of that stuff here. I'm already authenticated. But basically what it gives me is a app web context and a site web context. And hopefully throughout the week, if you've seen enough of the APIs, you can kind of see those are very fundamental aspects of the SharePoint API, to be able to get to things within my application, to be able to get to other artifacts within my SharePoint site. And so being able to work with over the REST APIs, working in this case with my picture library, that would be the place to do that. And I knew I was going to run out of time, so what I have over here in my base site, if I go over to site content, I actually already have an app which I already deployed and made available through the app catalog that was installed here. I'm able to launch that. You'll see that I actually themed this one to be a little bit more consistent with my SharePoint site theme. And let's just go. Maybe I already have some data over here. You can kind of see that I've already got thumbnails, so I'm already using the SharePoint service to be able to have those thumbnails produced for me, so I'm not downloading the entire picture right from the start in my list. If I tap one of these, it's going to give me a web-optimized version of that site, of that photo. If I were on my device here, you'd see that if I go ahead and upload photos, depending on my device, if this is, say, on an iPad, for example, I'd be able to click on this browse button, which then opens up and allows me to either pick a photo that's already on my device, or I'd be able to take a new photo, and that would be one way to be able to get it up there. So that kind of shows you kind of the way that you would be able to, you know, build an app that then integrates with very specific SharePoint services to be able to do a lot of heavy lifting for you. I have a question right up there at the back. When you're doing all of this on your SharePoint server, where does all the code go? It's basically the server. Remember the business logic that I was writing about entities and display cleanliness and all of that? Well, that's running on server side, and that would be provisioned for me behind the scenes on the service. It's going to go into its own site behind the scenes, the way that SharePoint, you know, provisions the site and any databases for me. It's not going on the SharePoint site. It's going to be on its own. And that trust relationship is going to be set up for me through that publish experience and by me actually installing that application in my site. Got it. All right. So the question is, you know, is it its own web? In this case, it will be its own app web. And in this case, because I've created a photo library, it's going to be part of that app web. If I was wanting to connect to something that's already existing, I could do that, but it would already need to be provisioned, already part of that site, you know, depending on what your scenario is, I guess, right?
So does the code end up in the GAC?
Does the code end up in the GAC? In this model, your code does not end up in the GAC. It's in the app site. That's right. Okay, so I'm going to wrap things up here. I want to be able to share at least one slide with you because being able to get to... basically, there's a whole bunch of resources out there. A very exciting week for us as we got the preview out. We have a team blog. We have a dev center. If there's anything that... like msdn.com/lightswitch, and that has a whole bunch. It has a link to the... to the preview, has a link to forums that you can provide feedback to us. We have a lot of team members who kind of listen in on that. We're on Facebook, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. You've been a great audience. Thank you very much. Great questions. I'm pretty sure I haven't been able to get to anything, to all questions here. So what I'll do is I'll hang out over here to answer any questions that you have. And I'll also be available in the booth later on. I'll be hanging out there if folks have any questions there, okay? Cool.